Hello and welcome to Radio Clash 123, and this is the RX interview.
From the beginning of time, in the history of the world, you and I have always been at war. Freedom, fear, God and the devil, in a common voice, we are joined together. Some say, oh, we must leave poor George alone. But as a saint of our times has said, I don't give a fuck, man. Give him that baby part. We'll the real R. X, please stand up. We'll the real R. X, please stand up. We'll the real R. X, please stand up. The real RX, please stand up. My name
is RX.
RX. My name
is
RX.
RX. That's news to me.
In today's world, direct communication is a ticket to success. So tonight I propose a plan to destroy you once and for all. In the next 4 years, I will work with my fellow Americans, taking requests with the ultimate goal, the total control of your soul. Wield the real RX, please stand up. 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 My name
is RX.
And the whole world now knows my name
is
RX.
RX.
Okay.
By the way, I wake up every day, every morning. That's my job. And it's hard work. It is hard work. It's hard work. It's incredibly hard. Believe me. But I think it's worth it, Jim. I think it's worth it. Because I know in the long term, it will set such a powerful example that we can look back and say we did our duty. Duty.
This is Tim from Radio Clash, and I'm talking to RX over in the States.
What's up?
Yes, hopefully the satellite style lag isn't too bad. So, you're a bit of an enigma, you are. A lot of people don't know anything about you. So, who are you and where do you live?
It depends on... Well, who I am remains mostly the same. Where I live depends on the day, I suppose. Reasonably homeless but theoretically I live in and around New York City. And who am I? I'm RX. and an enigma I shall remain.
Yes, you're an enigma wrapped up in a mystery, or well, however.
Sometimes, yeah, whichever the order is, but yeah, that's sort of the idea, you know. I'm gonna start putting out some tracks with a friend of mine that we've been working on, so that'll be more sort of, you know, quote unquote proper music rather than this poli-sci stuff. And then there will be a face to the enigma, but nonetheless.
I saw that you were doing the me stuff, which actually really liked.
Exactly. Well, that's probably what you like about that is probably mostly this fellow that I work with. His name's Nick Lehman, and he's excellent, man. He's just the guy's you know, of all the people that work in music, he's one of the only talented ones.
So how did you get into mashups and cut-ups from all this music?
You know, it was partly through this guy Nick's suggestion and some stuff that he was doing you know, where he was taking bits of television shows and cutting up, you know, dialogue and putting them within tracks he was working on. And then I was hanging out with this guy who used to be a bass player for Generation X. His name is Tony James, and he was working on a track with Mick Jones, that was a cut up of Frank Sinatra. And they, you know, he played it for me. It was fucking excellent. I don't think this is like going back, I guess, 3 or 4 years ago. I don't think they've released it, and it was an excellent track. But so probably those things were in my head at some point, and I had heard a Happy Mondays track where they had sampled or they had taken a rearrangement of a Ronald Reagan speech and put it, you know, made a track around it that was also excellent, you know. And so these things were in my head, and I was avoiding, I'm a really crap singer, and I was avoiding singing a track that I was working on, and I happened to have George Bush's State of the Union on at the same time, and he sounds great. I mean, you know, I don't necessarily agree with what he says or what he does, but his voice is excellent. Guy sounds like fucking Superman. So I, you know, problem solved. I get him to be my singer.
So what's the inspiration for your cut-ups? What's the influences?
Well, how do you mean, musically or more politically?
Both.
Well, politically, you know, I had done the one State of the Union rearranged just sort of as a giggle. Like I said, I had heard some other things like it, and I wasn't going to do anything else. And then I heard, you know, President Bush say some stuff that, you know, he was talking about gay marriage, and I couldn't believe that. The President of the United States was talking about enshrining discrimination in the Constitution. So then I did another and another and another and another, and, you know, it got quite habit forming. Like I said, I'm a crap singer, so it was a great way to procrastinate, you know, and do my civic duty at the same time.
So how long does it take to do the mashups?
Man, it varies. It takes a long time to get somebody to do a cover. You know, like, for instance, George Bush doing Sunday Bloody Sunday might have taken me about a month to do the speech. And on the other hand, you know, Tony Blair doing Should I Say or Should I Go might have taken a week or so, maybe 2 weeks all said and done. But that's really probably because I'm just a vicious procrastinator. I probably could have gotten it done faster. So, you know, anywhere from a week to a month. And if it's something, you know, I took a whack at doing My Generation with George Bush, and that was really difficult, and I ended up making it half My Generation, half just sort of, you know, slapstick, and that might have taken like 2 months.
Wow. So,
yeah, and that's pretty, it is pretty nonstop work, you know, between making coffee and having a puff, and you know, it's 16-hour days, 7 days a week.
Wow.
But you know, it's comedy, man. It's just silly.
Next satellite radio broadcast, a new radio broadcast system. Here's my mix. Good evening, I'm George W. Bush, President of the United States. I'm so pleased to be working with Senator Clinton. She is a fabulous woman.
Thank you, President Bush. As you know better than most, as all of us know, we must say nuclear,
seriously,
seriously, obviously,
no doubt,
no doubt,
no doubt,
no doubt,
no doubt in my mind,
no doubt.
Nuestros hermanos y hermanas, ame al prójimo como a sí mismo. Love your neighbor like you'd like to be loved yourself.
With great frequency and vigor.
Como a sí mismo. It's a universal call. Como a sí mismo. It's a universal love. I should have done this 4 years ago.
What? Amazing, isn't it?
Que Dios le bendiga. Como a sí mismo. People try to put us down.
People like you and me.
I don't think so, Bill. Just because we get around.
Welcome to Washington. Goes with the territory.
Thanks, they do. Look awfully cold. I seriously suggest you go. We have got to work together, poppycock, to eradicate poppycrock. To eradicate poppycrock. And as a matter of fact, I'd call it crap.
Crap?
Huh? I wouldn't call it crap.
Crap?
Yeah, crap. Oh my goodness.
What's going on?
Blow the whistle. We have a problem. Poppycrock. Poppycock. Poppycrock. You're in control of your life, not the government. The government's not dictating, you know, what you, how you do things. You are.
At this critical time, in this complicated situation we find ourselves in, let us be unequivocally clear. If we allow this dehumanizing rhetoric to go unchallenged, it can spread, and it can take young minds and twist and pervert them. That infection is contagious. That infection is contagious. That infection is contagious, and it can spread. It can spread.
Kind of like a dog chasing your tail. Stop. That's a cheap shot.
It has. has to end now.
Let me finish. If I were to ever say, wrong war, wrong place, wrong time. Wrong war at the wrong place at the wrong time. Wrong war at the wrong... Wrong war, wrong place, wrong time. Wrong war at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Wrong war at the wrong time at the wrong place.
Wrong war at the wrong time at the right wrong place. The wrong war at the wrong place. Wrong war, wrong time, wrong place. Wrong war, wrong time, wrong place. It's the wrong war at the wrong time at the wrong place.
You would have had trouble containing yourself from laughing out loud at the president.
It's a sad situation.
Too much poppycock here in Washington, D.C. Poppycock. Poppycock. Poppycock.
Disassemble. Is that the verb you used? Disassemble. That means not tell the truth. Give the man a blot. I got a hop. And that's exactly what I'm going to do. Ciao.
Well, I love it. The first time I heard them must have been 2003 or 4. And I've always loved them. And
Cool, thanks, man.
I love the one you did as RX 2008, which we'll come to a little bit later. Blair one.
The Should I Stay or Should I Go?
Yeah, because of course, now today is first day of Prime Minister Brown.
Right. Well, tell me what to think about Prime Minister Brown. What's his story, or is it impolitic for you to say?
Well, no, I'm fine. I'm happy to say. I think he's a bit of a useless waste of space. He's been spending so long wanting to take over that I think his reign's going to be a disaster. So I have a feeling it's not going to go well. It's like a Hollywood movie, you know, when you...
It's almost got that script.
Yeah,
right?
You know, when you start have a sequel and you have a sequel and you know that it's not going to go well.
Sure.
It's that kind of thing.
And you got David Cameron on your hands, right?
Oh God, yeah. I mean,
I saw a brilliant bit on. I don't know if it was Question Time or you know, it was one of those. I think it was, you know, one of the BBC programs, and whoever the interviewer was asking Cameron about his you know, alleged drug use and history, and Cameron's saying, well, I've made a decision, I'm just not going to talk about it. And the interviewer says, yeah, but that's why people don't trust politicians. Cameron goes, well, I'm not going to talk about it. So the interviewer says, well, surely you can agree that the joints that kids are smoking today are much stronger than the joints that you smoked when you were in school. And Cameron just, well, yeah, I can agree with that. Just walked right into it, man. Brilliant.
Well, these won't be drawn on stuff like that. It's silly. And
totally silly, because you know it's true. So why not just say it?
Well, a lot of them have got a history. I mean,
who doesn't?
Well, yeah,
that's what we like about them.
Well, I mean, certainly Bush has apparently got a history.
Yeah, no,
in drugs, which has
welcome to the club.
Been very, very kind of seems to be strangely hushed up. I don't understand that,
and I don't really understand why. You know, like who cares?
Well, I thought most of the time it's a selling point nowadays.
Well, I'm counting on it. Looking to make a career out of it.
Breeze, bass, rock, bass, name, bass, shooter, blow. Get higher, baby. Get higher, baby. Get higher, baby. And never come down. Free bass. Dreams of passion going through my mind, and all the while I think of you. Pipelines, a very strange reaction for us to unwind. The more I see, the more I do. Something of a phenomenon telling your body to come along, because white lines blow away. Blow. Rock. Blow. Kick it right, white line highway. Call your friends, they can go my way. Pay your toll, sell your soul. Pound for pound, cost more than gold. The longer you stay, the more you pay. White lines go a long way, either up your nose or through your vein, with nothing to gain except killing your brain. Freeze, bass, rock, bass, name, bass, shooter, blow. Get higher, baby. Get higher, baby. Get higher, baby. And don't ever come down. Free bass. A million magic crystals painted pure and white in multi-million dollars. Almost.
almost overnight. Some asshole took a picture of Kate Moss doing lines. Now she's being victimized for imaginary crimes. Freeze. Rock. Kane. Shooter. Blow. Kane. Face. Rock. Blow. Get higher, baby. Get higher, baby. Get higher, baby. And don't ever come down. Free base. Swing.
I want to talk about your presidential campaign.
That's right. Here to save the day.
You're here to save the day.
If you know any gringos, you know, send them my way.
So, what's your first thing you would do as a president?
End the drug war. It's fucking ridiculous. Nixon, apparently Nixon commissioned a study on marijuana and marijuana use, and so his Blue Ribbon panel comes back and says he should legalize it. He effectively tears up their report and instantly, allocates billions of dollars to the DEA. So this farce has been going on for 30 some odd years, and it's time to end it.
Don't you think it's sort of a bit of a smokescreen like Iraq?
that's a good pun. I think it's an industry, man. I think it's just a way to take money and spend money and aggregate power. And I think Iraq is a whole nother fiasco, but I think to spend billions and billions of dollars to lock people up for a lifestyle choice is crazy.
Well, you would have thought they would have learned from Prohibition.
You would think that when the president, the vice president, and various Congress peoples or persons have had their own run of it, whether it's David Cameron over there or George Bush over here, you would think that they would personally know better and not want to be hypocrites like that. But I guess something about being a politician, being a hypocrite, is not necessarily mutually exclusive.
Yeah, it comes with a job, doesn't it?
I suppose.
So what's your political background?
Political background? I probably used to think that I was a Republican.
Wow.
Yeah. I got the order reversed. I went from Republican to liberal is a sort of a dirty word for some reason, but nonetheless, I think it's probably the right word. I think that as far as... politics seems to be nonsense. It seems to have nothing to do with, thought. And the ideas of freedom and freedom of speech and no taxes, forget about... George Bush said something funny like, the government doesn't have a right to take more than 30% of your income. And I guess on the one hand, he's right, they don't. But on the other hand, I don't think they have the right to take any of it. I think that's crazy. It's called stealing. Stealing from people that can barely afford to pay their bills, I just think that's wrong. Maybe that's the way that it was, and maybe that's the way that it used to work, but it doesn't mean that you can't figure out a way, for it to work a bit better, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, the problem with taxes is a kind of a devil's bargain, because you'd have to pay for government. You have to pay for the bins to be emptied and the lights to be switched on.
Sure, you do. But the idea of giving it to people like politicians that you don't trust.
Yeah,
And you don't trust politicians because they prove themselves untrustworthy, yet you're going to trust them nonetheless to take your money and spend it wisely and provide you with efficient and effective services. You're right, it's a devil's bargain because you do need some of those things, but, it's sort of like the wrong solution. It's like using a wrench as a hammer. You can do it, but you'd be a lot better off if you just went and got yourself a fucking hammer.
Well, I've been having a lot of these conversations online about all the ecological, carbon footprint stuff, because a lot of it seems to be aimed at a certain class of people, saying, you know, you have to be green, and regardless of whether they can afford it.
Well, I mean, you know, there's a way to achieve the result that doesn't, you know, it's like kids. You can get kids to behave, quote unquote, or you know, to sort of play along, or you can beat them. You know.
Yeah.
And both of them will probably get you the result that you want for the short term, but in the long term, there is a better solution than beating them.
Yeah.
I don't have any kids, so I can't speak from personal experience, but I suspect that there are better ways to solve problems than maybe the first solution that comes to mind. And yeah, when you're gonna tax people and price people that are already taxed and priced out of the market to begin with. I don't know if you saw it, but apparently the head of the UN was talking about global warming being to blame for Darfur, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking,
does that work?
I'm thinking, well, that's like the gun argument. Guns don't kill people; people kill people. And global warming doesn't kill people; people kill people.
Yes.
Global warming might sooner or later, but you know, come on, man.
I know. It's a crazy situation, and
it's like the new bogeyman.
Yeah, well, it's like the fear that's okay to be afraid of.
Right, it's like Y2K then, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I've noticed that a lot of the major scares have happened around wars.
Right, well, sure, right?
Because you've got that on in the 70s, they were paranoid about ecological disaster, which didn't happen,
right.
Which was the Vietnam War. Then you had global warming in the early 90s, that was the first Iraq War.
Right.
And now you've got all this worry about this, and you've got the second Iraq War.
Right.
And I'm starting to wonder if this is actually intentional.
Well, yeah, it could be. It could be real. You know, I certainly have I have absolutely no idea myself. I mean, I believe the theory that if, as a person, you know, you smoke cigarettes, that cigarette smoke is no good for you. Therefore, if the planet smokes, it's no good for the planet. But
yeah.
As for the immediacy of the science, who knows? And as for the, you know, your theory that it's a distraction from you know, other, well, you know, it's like George Bush talks about his culture of life. You know, we've got to have a culture of life. And well, but how does that apply to the war?
Yeah, killing people. A culture of life is killing people.
I'm with you on the culture of life bit, but it seems to me that you're omitting a big part of it, right?
Yeah, it's just like the pro-lifers killing abortion technicians.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Very
brilliant,
ironic.
Brilliant, in God's name.
Imagine yourself in heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us, only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. The color girls say, take a walk on the wild side. 1, 2, 3, 4. Imagine yourself countries. It isn't hard to do that. Nothing to kill or die for. Religion too. Imagine all the people living life in peace. The color girls say, take a walk on the wild side. Take a walk on the wild side. Imagine no possessions. I wonder if you can. No need for greed or hunger. A brotherhood of man. Imagine all the people sharing all the world. The color girls say, wild side.
tricky.
Peace.
So, politics and music, can it be fun?
It's fun if you're interested in politics. If you're not interested in politics, then that's sort of, you know, like letting the drunk drive the car. So theoretically, you ought to be interested in politics. Yeah, it's good fun. It's good fun to listen to the things that politicians say, the hypocrisies, and scary at the same time. But
well, I mean, I think what you do with your cut-ups is to show the hypocrisy, but also it's a fun track to listen to.
Yeah, well, cool, thanks. I sort of what I'm going for is to say, wait a second, that doesn't make any sense, but to do it in a way that if you just, I get the feeling that if you just listen to a politician speak, you wouldn't listen to it. And yeah. And something about it, it's like I was telling you before about listening to the Happy Mondays track with Ronald Reagan, and I stopped, my jaw dropped, and I remember the first time I heard that track and where I was, and you pay attention to it, and it does sort of set up a good backdrop for the ludicrous things that politicians really talk about, a culture of life.
Well, it seems like a lot of musicians are very scared to involve politics in their music.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a bit of a backlash for doing that sort of thing, especially if you're making money, you know. People that are making money seem to be uninclined to rock the boat.
Yeah.
Whether they're musicians or, you know, actors or, you know, there are an awful lot of people with a mighty big microphone out there in the world that seem to not use it, right?
Yeah, I've noticed that, especially in the media.
Yeah, definitely.
Strangely quiet.
Definitely. You know, and a lot of it probably simply comes down to their income source. The Dixie Chicks did it, and they got blacklisted they were made an example of. And I guess a lot of people figured that they didn't want to join those ranks.
So what's your favorite music or mashups?
Favorite music? I don't know, man. I mean, probably the stuff that this kid, Nick that I was telling you about, does. I'd say it's just excellent stuff.
Does he have a MySpace page? Or?
Yeah, he does, as a matter of fact. It's MySpace / Nickelman. Nickelman. And it's
cool.
Yeah, it's just excellent stuff. You know, he's a brilliant brilliant songwriter. He's a fucking great singer. And the lyrics are poetry. Really, like, just across the board, the best stuff that I've heard in a long time. What else do I like listening to? Underworld, excellent stuff. I don't know. I mean, this kid Nick was a DJ for years, and he's just got a great compilation of tracks. So anything from Rocksteady to stuff like there's a song by Basement Jacks that I listen to relentlessly called Supersonic.
Yeah.
I mean, I just listen to it. I mean, I can listen to that song 20 times in a day. And for a couple of years now, man, I just love that track. Peaches, you know who Peaches is?
Oh, I love Peaches. I've seen her 3 times.
Oh, really? How was it?
Yeah.
I think the first gig was the best. It was about 100 people at a place called Pop Stars.
Yeah.
And it would be 2002 or 3.
Right.
It was very early on. And that was brilliant because there was no security there. She was just doing a PA or live set of about 6 songs,
right.
With Mignon, and she ended up spitting fake blood at the audience, and everyone got covered.
Excellent. Sounds like a great show.
It was. It was.
Yeah, I haven't seen her. I've only heard a couple of her tracks, but they're fucking great.
Yeah.
There's a girl who. There's a girl who I know in New York whose name is her name is Olga Bell, who's fucking excellent, and, you know, excellent stuff. Again, just, you know, the words are really smart. She's a great singer and a great songwriter. It's funny, she did it. I think she did basically like an album using GarageBand.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, and I you spend all your time saying, well, I can't do this, I can't do that, because I don't have this and I don't have that. And there's somebody that took a laptop and made some of the best music that I've heard in a long time. I mean, we don't hear a lot of good music on the radio in the States, so, you know.
And that's what I like about Peaches, is that DIY ethic, that she was just using a 505 groove box.
Yeah, whatever you got, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool.
The production of those is so rough, but it's it works.
Yeah, well, that track "Fuck the Pain Away" is about as simple as it gets in some regards, but it's excellent.
That was my first ever mashup.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it was Peaches versus Future Sound of London. We Have Explosive.
I don't know if I know it.
Oh, it was my first ever release. It wasn't too bad.
Great, maybe yeah. Maybe when we're done with this interview, you can send me, we swap email addresses, you can send me the send me the mix.
Yeah, I will do. I've done about two or three Peaches, just because I like her, but I'm always very kind of finicky about what works.
I've been listening to, all of a sudden, I've been listening to Bruce Lee by Underworld, also relentlessly, you know, like a dozen times a day.
Wow.
Yeah, well, you know. And it's not like I hadn't heard it before, you know. I used to listen to the album pretty relentlessly, but now I seem to have zoned in on that track. So I go back and forth from Supersonic to Bruce Lee, and then Fuck the Pain Away, and then back to Bruce Lee. And
you could do a mashup of all three.
Oh yeah, just one 10-hour big motherfucking mashup.
Music nonstop, literally.
Yeah, pretty much. My three favorite songs. For the past, you know, 2 years.
Can't sleep, wide awake. Don't think I'm gonna make it. My life, my mistakes, love and hate, it's complicated. Can't think, my mind aches. Eyes blink, they're only faking.
I'm not afraid to die.
that's the devil of recording. It's almost as if the instant that you realize there's a microphone on, or that you're actually in record mode, it just all goes to shit. It really does. Like, well, suddenly it's work, you know, and suddenly you're concentrating, and you know, it's the exact antithesis of playing music.
Oh, that's what I'm like every time I'm podcasting.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's how I try to do my stuff, is just either constantly have it in record, so I'm not really paying attention to it, or to, you know, to procrastinate as long as possible, put it in record and be done with it, and not really give a shit about them. I guess I've gotten past the giving a shit about the mistakes part of it. You know, the mistakes are staying. I don't care if the notes are flat. I don't care if the notes are wrong. I'm not redoing it.
Well, I'm like that with mashups and long mixes. I take. I've got a mix I've been working on for about a year and a half.
Yeah, perfect. Welcome to the club.
And it's not even a mashup. It's just a long mix, or actually a set of two long mixes now. And I haven't even started putting together. I've just been collating tracks.
Right. Cool. Well, I mean, you know, you gotta like it. Doesn't matter how long you take. It only matters if it took a long time and you don't like it.
Well, I'm like an old bag lady in that regard. I just got very OCD. I just collect.
That's great. That's, like I said, I pilfered Nick's iTunes collection. It's, thank God he collects, because I wouldn't know where to begin. And, you know, also I probably went for 10 or 15 years, more or less, without listening to a lot of music at all, and suddenly I stumbled across like a 50-year collection of excellent, you know, every one of the tracks is excellent, doesn't matter what it is. He's got this great premise that there's so much good music that you might as well only listen to what's excellent rather than every single song, and that makes sense, you know.
Though it's hard to know which is the good songs.
Well, when somebody hands you a collection, it's a lot easier to know.
True.
Like I said, he's an excellent DJ, so he's got just a really fine collection of music.
So you've been doing presidential addresses on YouTube.
I'm doing the presidential addresses. I'm sort of trying to sort one out for the 4th of July.
Cool.
So-called Independence Day.
You'll be uploading a virus then?
With any luck.
With a Mac?
Yeah, no doubt.
To an alien spaceship. Oh, on the wrong Independence Day. Oh.
I'm already on the alien spaceship.
That's good weed.
5 mile, yeah, it's excellent. Excellent stuff. I'd send you some, but the internets won't let me. 5 mile wide UFOs and whatnot. And I'm like, oh, this sounds just like a movie.
Yes, yes. And just they're invading, yeah. That's the mushrooms. So, what's your favorite mashup or cut up you've done?
That I've done? I don't know. I mean, I think some of them are good for different reasons. And I did one that's a mashup of Whole Lotta Love and When the Levee Breaks, and it's pretty much George Bush freestyling about Darfur. And I like that stuff better than the you know, overtly critical stuff. You know, like Imagine, and simply because I say what I mean to say without being as negative as I can be, which has its place as well, no doubt, but you know, it's a lot easier to say what you want and say what you mean and not be a shit about it. So that one's one of the better ones. You know, I mean, it's the guitar line from Whole Lotta Love and the drums from When the Levee Breaks, so kind of starts off in a good place, you know.
Well, I mean, I quite like the HIV/AIDS track you did.
Yeah, I was going to say that one too, for the same reason. It's
not obvious,
no,
whether it's pro or anti. There's a really weird kind of duality there.
I mean, it's not, you know, none of it at the end of the day is about George Bush or Tony Blair or anybody else. It's about the point, right? So if you have the conclusion, as George Bush is saying, you've got 20 million people dying of AIDS in Africa, and you're going to spend $5 billion on it, but you're going to spend $300 billion or $400 billion plus to kill people in Iraq, and you have this culture of life, but you can only spend $5 billion on the culture of life. But, you know, it's that's the point. The point is, You can save an awful lot of lives by focusing on it a little more. You're saying it's a problem. You know it's a problem. You're making sense so far, except when you come down to you're only going to spend $5 billion on it.
Yeah.
So, and it's not really even the money that's the issue. It's more a matter of the point of the priorities. You'll spend $400 billion to kill people in war, but only $5 billion to save lives with medicine.
I know.
If you're going to declare war on anything, why don't you declare war on AIDS?
Some of that statistic in South Africa is that something like a third of the population is infected.
Yeah, it depends on where you are, but in I've heard varying statistics that, in some countries, or not in some countries, there are as many AIDS orphans in Africa as there are children in Italy, which... Wow. When you put it in comparison, when you just hear numbers, 3 million, 4 million, you kind of dismiss those the same way you dismiss government budgets, $20 trillion or whatever. It's so mind-boggling that you don't really compute it. But when you think about, if you just took all the children in Italy and you said none of them had parents, that kind of puts some shape to it or some dimension to it. At least for me, it does.
Yeah, it does. It does.
That's a disgraceful. It's a disgraceful statistic, and you look back on things like the Holocaust, and you look back at history, and you say, "Well, how could people have let that happen?" And what a shame on that period, for and the people that lived in that period of time, and so now we have our own shame on our hands,
HIV/AIDS today on the continent of Africa. Nearly 30 million people have the AIDS virus, including 3 million children under the age 15. There are whole countries in Africa where more than one-third of the adult population carries the infection. More than 4 million require immediate drug treatment. Yet across that continent, only 50,000 AIDS victims, only 50,000, are receiving the medicine they need. Today on the continent of Africa, nearly 30 million people have the AIDS virus. Because the AIDS diagnosis is considered a death sentence, many do not seek treatment. Almost all who do are turned away. A doctor in rural South Africa describes his frustration. He says we have no medicines. Many hospitals tell people, you've got AIDS, we can't help you. In an age of miraculous medicines, no person should have to hear those words. Each age is a dream that is dying, or one that is coming to birth. And we live in the country where the biggest dreams are born. The abolition of slavery was only a dream, until one day it was fulfilled. Our generation has dreams of its own. AIDS can be prevented, ladies and gentlemen. Seldom has history offered a greater opportunity to do so much for so many. Antiretroviral drugs can extend life for many years. And the cost of those drugs has dropped from $12,000 a year to under $300 a year, which places a tremendous possibility within our grasp. To meet a severe and urgent crisis abroad tonight, I propose the Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, a work of mercy beyond all current international efforts to help the people of Africa. This comprehensive plan will prevent 7 million new AIDS infections and provide humane care for millions of people suffering from AIDS and for children orphaned by AIDS. I ask the Congress to commit $200 billion over the next 5 years to turn the tide against AIDS in the most afflicted nations of Africa and around the world. Because HIV/AIDS brings suffering and fear into so many lives, because a society is measured by how it treats the weak and vulnerable, we must strive to build a culture of life. Medical research can help us reach that goal by developing treatments and cures that save lives and help people overcome that disease.
AIDS is the greatest health crisis of our time, and our unprecedented commitment will bring new hope to those who have walked too long in the shadow of death.
It was only a dream. 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 Today on the
continent of Africa. Nearly 30 million people have the AIDS virus, including 3 million children under the age 15. Today, on the continent of Africa, nearly 30 million people have the AIDS virus, including 3 million children under the age 15. Today, on the continent of Africa, nearly 30 million people have the AIDS virus. Today, on the continent of Africa, nearly 30 million people have the AIDS virus.
I'm so amazed when I'm over in the States about how the media is so... it's just fixated as if the States was there floating in a lone sea with no one else around it.
Well, yeah, I mean, to a degree, I mean, that's almost how it is. We are like a little island, and everything else does physically seem far, far away. But reality, you and I know, is quite a bit different. And again, when you can videotape an image and send it instantly across the world, and you can fly anywhere within a day, you know, it's all these imaginary lines that a bunch of people agreed to on a piece of paper a long time ago are really kind of irrelevant these days.
Well, I mean, I contrast that with Britain. Basically, it's an island.
Right, yeah, exactly. But much closer to everybody else.
Yeah, it's close to everyone else, and it's not as big enough for, you know, to actually fill the whole news with stuff. But even as much as people in Britain try to ignore the rest of the world, it's sort of there.
Yeah, sure. Well, you're also part of, you know, one way or the other, you're part of the EU, you're part of what happens in other countries. I mean, what happens in other countries affects us here, but it seems like it's you're more aware of it there. And certainly, you know, when I've been in London and watched the news, the news, quote-unquote, programming is completely different. If you have somebody interviewing a politician, they'll ask the question, and then they'll ask the question again if they don't get the answer.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody tries to duck the question. Here, a lot of times, what you get is somebody will ask, it's like a softball pitch, you know. This is, let me ask you a question so you can go and say whatever the hell you want. And rather than, you know, nobody ever seems to say, but wait, that's just a little bullshit.
I wish they would.
I wish they would, and I see that a bit when I'm in London and I'm watching an interview, like I was saying with this fella interviewing David Cameron. He's, you know, he said, it's like, don't you realize that's why people don't like politicians?
Exactly.
We know the truth, and you won't even acknowledge it.
Well, I mean, it's even now here. It's been having a lot of things where you'd ask a question and they try and spin it around. It's only the really good journalists who will stop them and say,
right,
answer the fucking question.
Yeah, I mean, come on, man. I asked you about A, you're telling me about B. And George, I was kind of, you know, after September 11th, I was staying at a friend's place, and I was watching, I was just watching the news relentlessly, and I was struck by two things. I was struck by the fact that right away the commercials were being paid for by, you know, Shell and Exxon.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at Follow the Money, the news, the information, the news channels, the commercials were paid for by
oil.
Basically, Shell making deep sea biology safe from the world. You know, and you're like, this is incredible. And the other thing was, somebody would ask George Bush a question, and it didn't matter what the question was, he would just segue into some completely different spiel that was clearly, you know, rehearsed. But it was, I was definitely and absolutely impressed by the skill with which he did it. You know,
yeah,
it's like, you could ask me a question, it doesn't matter what you ask me, I'm going to talk to you about my shoelaces.
Yes, what you should be asking me is about my shoelaces. Or my shoelaces.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because my shoelaces today are... Like, wait a minute. And nobody would say bullshit. And that's when I was really struck by, wait, this is all make-believe. And then I took a shitload of acid, and it only got worse.
Oh, yes, I can imagine that getting a lot worse.
Well, it really, like, it's all make-believe, man. I don't believe any of this is actually happening.
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States. Mr. Speaker, members of Congress, Mom and Dad, last month a girl in Lincoln, Rhode Island sent me a letter. It began, "Dear George W. Bush, if there's anything you know, please send me a letter. P.S. Kiss my ass. Dick is a killer." It began the end of June in the Casablanca. Vice President Cheney, he showed the way. Terrified and innocent, the desire growing stronger, submitting to the whim of one brutal man. I feel free, I feel free, I feel free, I feel free. Dick is a killer. I feel free. Last August the 11th, on the deck of a carrier in the Pacific, I gave to you my complete commitment, and it is right. I love you, and I do not want to lose you. My purposes are just and true. Activity is increasing, and Dick is on the rise. By executive order, we're on the manhunt aboard the Starship Enterprise. The once all-powerful ruler of Iraq was found in a hole. President Clinton fucked it. True. President Clinton fucked it. And farmers felt the sorrow. Yes, farmers felt the sorrow. I feel free. Farmers felt the sorrow. And one reason is clear. Dick is a killer. 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 Dick. Fuck yourself. Kiss my ass. And I want you. It's difficult to talk about. And I want you, because you set me free. And I want you, and I want you, and I want you, just as surely as Dick is a killer. 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 Dick. Dick. Suck my dick. Fuck my ass. Dick is a killer. 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 Fuck yourself. Kiss my ass. I believe that God made me a woman. I feel it in my heart, and this bitch's voice must be heard. A sex change is the only certain way to preserve the sanctity of marriage. We are living in historic times. We are living in a time of great change. Our leadership and resolve can light the way for others. And having come this far, and in the unfolding of the years, this country has a new friend called Shirley W. Bush. Dick is a killer. 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 May God continue to bless America. Word. I feel free. I feel free. I feel free. I feel free. Dick is a killer. I feel free. Fuck it.
I mean, the whole thing about politics reminds me of something that worries me about mashups.
Yeah.
And cut-ups to some extent, is that when people appropriate things,
yeah,
there is this worry that they're actually perpetuating them.
Well, how do you mean?
Well, certainly with things like Adbusters. You know, the sort of advertisements.
Right.
You take the advert and you turn it around. Well, there is a kind of a side of that where they're using the media. They're actually strangely in love with the media.
Yeah, sure.
That they are taking the piss out of, and there is this thing worry that whether they are perpetuating those things or they're actually properly critiquing them.
Yeah, and to that end, I think that, you know, advertisers are appropriating mashups.
Yes.
Trying to dress up their ads as you know, quote unquote counterculture. You know, at the end of the day, buyer beware, right?
Well, that's the whole thing about EMI investing in mashups when they were the ones that gave me my cease and desist.
Right. Right. That's funny.
Yeah, well,
that you and John Rotten have that in common, huh?
Yeah.
It's good company.
I know. And it's that's the kind of thing is that surprises me.
Have you ever read this book called No Logo?
Yes, I have. I love that book.
Yeah, it's a bit like that. You know, it doesn't matter what you do. You take a mashup and they'll tell you can't do it until they realize that they're losing their asses, and they'll try to figure out a way that, you know, you take Madonna and Madonna will start making mashups next. Watch.
Well, it's something I love about, or loved, well, I do still love about mashups, is that they were unsellable.
Right.
And now, and they still haven't really succeeded in selling it too much, apart from a few cases.
Well, I mean, you know, this is tough because as some sort of musician, I've got to make money making music, but I think music's better when it's not made for money. So
yes.
I think at the end of the day, most music is becoming unsellable because it's available for free, and that's not, I don't know that that's really going to change at this point, whether it's LimeWire or just friends can swap tracks back and forth easily without lugging records around, and the sound quality is only going to improve. That's good. It'll you know, thin the herd a bit. There won't be so much crap made for money, which is really crap. And unfortunately, people still have to find a way to be able to make music and put food on the table. But at least, you know, if you're working on a mix for a year and a half, you give a shit about the music, you know?
Yeah.
As opposed to a bunch of assholes sitting around in a studio convincing themselves that it's fat. Mm-hmm. I've been in studios where... You know, the more somebody said it's fat, it was like the more you knew that it wasn't. You know, it's fat, right? It's fat. No, man, it's far from fucking fat.
Well, if you have to ask that question, it usually isn't.
Yeah, exactly. And if you have to ask the question and follow it with right, so that you sort of prime the questionee with the answer. Yeah, it's not fat.
Yes, I know. So, shall we wind this up, or do you want to talk about anything else?
I think that's good for now. I'd love to get your email and get that you know, track that you were telling me about, that first mashup that you did.
Well, it's not too embarrassing.
Hey, man, listen. one day I'll say, I told you I'm a crap singer. One day I'll send you some demos that you can just crap yourself laughing over. Just dreadful shit.
Well, I have to say thank you for sending me stuff, because you do send me mashups or links to mashups when you do them.
Cool, very cool. Glad you like them. Glad you play them.
Well, I do like them, and also appreciate you sending them.
Yeah, well, my pleasure. I'll send you a. I've actually been working on a track that's mostly done. Theoretically, it'll only be a couple of days. I'll send you a mix of it as is.
Cool.
Which is a bit less crappy than normal, but crap. Well, you know, I've been working with this kid Nick, and so when you work with somebody who's excellent, you sort of up your skills a bit.
And, cool.
And you know, so if he's really the driving voice in a band called Me, then this is me basically trying to sound like Nick. So. At least I'm trying to sound like somebody that sounds really good. I'll send it up.
Where can everyone get your mashups from?
The music stuff, man, I've been suffering nothing but technical difficulties trying to get my site working properly, and hopefully I'll have that all sorted out next week, including the audio tracks. The videos are up there, and that's at thepartyparty.com. By next week, I should have thepartyparty.com working with the audio tracks as well.
Yep.
Otherwise, I'll put a link to another site. I know some people that have the tracks hosted as well. And
also your presidential addresses are on YouTube.
The presidential addresses are on thepartyparty.com, and they're also on YouTube under the YouTube name RX2008.
Well, good luck for the presidential election.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. Like certainly. I said, if you have some gringos.
Well, certainly I would much rather vote for you than Hillary.
you know, so would I. And I'll tell you, I don't even want the fucking job. I just don't see anybody saying bullshit, you know, and it's clearly what it is. So I've got nothing better to do, and like I said, I'm homeless, so maybe this way I can say bullshit and get myself a place to live in the meantime.
Well, I hope you find somewhere to live.
Yeah, the White House. I'll have you over.
That would be very good. Thanks for being on the show.
Cool, Tim. Thanks for having me.
And I'll speak to you soon.
Yeah, I should have some stuff done in the next couple of weeks, and I'll send it as it's done.
Cool.
Take care, man.
Well, take care.
Ciao. Let freedom
ring. You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
Let freedom ring.
Alexander Hamilton said, a nation which can prefer disgrace to danger is prepared for a master and deserves one. And in that sentence, he told us the entire story. If we lose freedom here, there's no place to escape to. This is the last stand on earth.
Let freedom ring! Let freedom ring!
I would remind you that extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
So let freedom ring! Let freedom ring! Sisters and brothers, let freedom ring!
We will keep in mind and remember that Barry Goldwater has faith in us. He has faith that you and I have the ability and the dignity and the right to make our own decisions and determine our own destiny.
And let me remind you also that moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue.
You need some action.
We're at war with the most dangerous enemy that has ever faced mankind in his long climb from the swamp to the stars. And it's been said if we lose that war, and in so doing lose this way of freedom of ours, history will record with the greatest astonishment that those who had the most to lose did the least to prevent its happening.
In the long history of the world, only a few generations have been granted the role of defending freedom in its hour of maximum danger. I do not shrink from this responsibility. I welcome it.
Let freedom ring!
You and I know and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot heard round the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. Not an easy answer, but simple.
Let freedom ring!
Now let's set the record straight. Winston Churchill said the destiny of man is not measured by material computations. When great forces are on the move in the world, we learn we're spirits, not animals. And he said there's something going on in time and space and beyond time and space, which, whether we like it or not, spells duty.
Let freedom ring! Let freedom ring! Let freedom ring! We will be free one day, so let freedom ring!
What you and I have got to do is get involved. Brothers and sisters, we're starting a voters registration drive. We have to get everybody registered, not as Democrats or Republicans, but registered as independents. Nobody will have an excuse not to be registered. If you don't have the sense of responsibility to get registered, we'll move you out of town.
This is the issue of this election. Whether we believe in our capacity for self-government or whether we abandon the American Revolution and confess that a little intellectual elite in a far distant capital can plan our lives for us better than we can plan them ourselves.
Deep down in our nonviolent creed is the conviction that there are some things so dear, some things so precious, some things so eternally true that they're worth dying for. And if a man happens to be 36 years old, as I happen to be, some great truth stands before the door of his life, some great opportunity to stand up for that which is right. He's afraid his home will get bombed, or he's afraid that he will lose his job, or he's afraid that he will get shot or beat down by state troopers. He may go on and live until he's 80. He's just as dead at 36 as he would be at 80, and the cessation of breathing in his life is merely the belated announcement of an earlier death of the spirit. He's not refuses to stand up for that which is right. A man dies when he refuses to stand up for justice. A man dies when he refuses to take a stand for that which is true. So we're going to stand up right here. To live a long life, longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And He's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land.
Sad news for all of you, and that is that Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis, Tennessee. Martin Luther King dedicated his life to love and to justice between fellow human beings. He died in the cause of that effort. In this difficult day, in this difficult time for the United States, it's perhaps well to ask what kind of a nation we are and what direction we want to move in.
Let freedom ring. Let freedom ring, sisters and brothers. Let freedom ring. We will be free one day. So let freedom ring. Yeah.